Welcome to the Science Witch Podcast, where we explore how science and witchcraft intersect, interact, and affirm one another. I'm your co-host, James.
And I'm your co-host, Angel. This is our 75th episode with a conversation with professional mermaid and disability rights activist, Eularia. We wanted to bring this conversation to our listeners for the start of cancer season, and also because disability rights and visibility has become one of our central topics on the podcast, and July is Disability Pride Month.
Yeah, I'm always excited to wave the Disability Pride flag. The Americans with Disabilities Act was signed into law in July 1990, so happy 35th anniversary to the ADA. Anyway, we had a great conversation with Eularia about things related to disability, what it's like to be a professional mermaid, and other random things we're nerdy about. She seems like such a cool person and someone I'd really love to be friends with, so I hope we get to talk again.
We want to continue to center and platform people with disabilities doing awesome, witchy, nerdy things as we continue to face the unprecedented challenges and struggles of the descent into fascism here in these United States. We also wanted to continue to amplify voices like Eularia to bring visibility and also share the magic we are still able to make the world a better place with for the time being. So, without further ado, let's get to our interview with Eularia, professional mermaid and ocean advocate. All right. Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Science Witch Podcast. And today we are speaking with Eularia, a mermaid and also disability rights activist and makeup artist enthusiast as well. So this is actually one of the few episodes we're going to dual put on the YouTubes as well as on the RSS feed. So if you're a visual person and you want to get to see our lovely guest today, definitely check that out. Before we get really started, Eularia, would you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hello, my name is Eularia. My mermaid name started out as Water Song, so that's the second half. Some people know me as Eularia Water Song. I have been a mermaid performer for the past 10 plus years. And I moved out to the West Coast from the DC area to become a mermaid and be a belly dancer and singer and all the other stuff I've been doing. Nice. So yeah, I'm all things artsy performer, artist, just don't ask me to math.
Awesome, yes, and when I met you, we were both vending at an event, and it was really cool to talk to you, and it took a little while to circle back to you, but as a mermaid, I wanted you to talk about why mermaid and how you found your way to this, and maybe even give our listeners a little bit of people who are unfamiliar with being a mermaid, what that means and how you yourself be a mermaid.
It's definitely something that is not a career path that's super well known. Being a professional mermaid means you perform at parties and festivals and parades, and in my case, things like conventions and other events, any event where a little bit of magic, a little bit of whimsy is needed. But it's also a wonderful opportunity to educate about the environment and conservation, our beautiful marine ecosystem that exists all around the world. And so it's a great way to combine whimsy and entertainment and information and all kinds of education, not just about the environment, but social issues and all kinds of other stuff in more unusual, fun, and entertaining ways. It's not just standing at a blackboard and talking. So it's a wonderful opportunity to combine a whole bunch of stuff, including makeup and costume and all the other things.
Yeah.
And do you actually swim?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us more about that.
Yeah.
There are many people who perform in tanks, which is my absolute dream. I found out that mermaiding was even a thing when I was 16 from discovering the Weekiwaukee mermaids in Florida. It's this attraction that's been around for decades upon decades down in Florida, where women dress up in tails and sometimes just in swimsuits and perform underwater breathing off of hoses in this incredible natural spring in Florida. And they go down, they get all the specialized training, and they have a whole underwater theater. So you go down in stadium seating and you get to watch them perform these timed shows throughout the day. It's incredible. And I had always been a water baby because of my visual impairment. I could swim before I could walk. So when I found out that there was a job that you could do underwater and swim and combine fantasy and all these other things that I loved, I was just like,
Dream job,
what?
for
Yeah.
sure.
And so there's those ladies. And since then, I found out that there are performers like the dive bar. I've actually tried out for the dive bar mermaids. Some bars have big old tanks in them where you can go and perform. I believe there's one in Michigan, there's one in Sacramento, which is the dive bar. The rec bar in Florida used to be a thing. So, and some mermaids perform at Renaissance festivals in their own tanks and stuff. It's quite the industry, but it's a lesser well-known one, and it's just so diverse and fun.
So cool.
Yeah, it's super awesome. But I didn't pursue it for many, many years because I didn't think I could. A, being visually impaired, that wasn't a huge thing, but I've always been fluffy. And when I first saw that show, all the Weekiwaukee mermaids were all super tiny. So I was like, oh my God, I want to try out. They do take people at that particular venue who are very young. They start out at, I think, at 18 is the earliest age. But I was like, I don't want to be the Ursula all the time. I don't want to be the villain. I had a fear that they would typecast me as the bad guy because they do The Little Mermaid as one of their main shows, unsurprisingly. So yeah, I never pursued it. I just didn't feel like I could. I would be welcomed in that community. So it took me many decades after that to give it a go. Moved out here to Portland to be a fish.
And there's actually a documentary about the mermaids that you mentioned in Florida, which I encourage folks to check out. I'll put it in the show notes. But yeah, you're right. When people think of mermaids, they often think of white, able-bodied, thin women, or femme people with tails. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of diversity and representation in the mermaids. Obviously, you need to swim, but the whole idea of being in water is something that it gives people the opportunity that say that have physical disabilities or mobility issues, something to do and perform with. And so, what do you think we could do better in terms of making these fandoms and, in your case, this industry, the mermaid industry, more accessible and have more representation of diverse bodies?
Well, first, I freaking love that you know the documentary. I'm guessing you mean Mer People on Netflix?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And I'll put it in the show notes.
The wild thing is that those folks are my friends. Like
That's so
the
cool.
people that they featured. I was not in it, but if you've seen it, there's a moment where Mermaid Sparkle, one of the featured mermaids, is dancing in a party with this great multicolored LED Isis wings. Those were mine. We were at the same party, and I was letting everybody borrow my Isis wings just to play and have fun. So when that scene made it, I was like, I'm almost in there. So yeah, and those people are wonderful and sweet, and it's because it's such a lesser known industry, it's a small community. So you know, if you are a jerk face or if you make a major mistake, like it will be known. So everybody really makes an effort to be decent people. And the
It's good
great
to
thing about
hear.
it being a burgeoning community is that we try to, or at least my endeavor is that we have a community that we're having the blessing of being able to build from the ground up. So we can choose what values we choose to bring into the community or cultivate. And what qualities of maybe human society that we choose to leave behind. So, I mean, like, still human bodies, human souls, all that fun stuff. So people are people, and drama and weirdness happens because sometimes you can't leave that behind. We are still scarred, flawed human beings. But yeah, it gives us the chance to really cultivate what we want to as it grows and really plant a better seed than the one that we were all given, which I value. I digress. To go back to your question, yeah, the main examples of merpeople, the really top three that people have are Ariel, Madison, okay, maybe four, I guess the aquamarine girl, I can't remember her name, Mad Mermaid, and Aquaman. And they are all super fit, super young. Ariel is literally a teenager. Madison is a blonde. Aquaman's the only brunette, and he only got in here, what, 5, 10 years ago? So there's definitely this sort of Eurocentric thing. And one of the things I love about the documentary that you mentioned was that they focus on Mer, I was going to say his given name, but Mer name, Blix, the Blix Unami. He is a black, openly gay merman. We've got Mermaid Shay Monique, who is a also a black, fabulously proud, plus size mermaid. She's also in that film. So they tried. They're slowly pulling away the cobwebs of the old traditional images of merpeople, and I'm grateful that they did that. But there's a lot to be done still. And one thing I like to say is that expecting merpeople to be like Ariel and Madison and Jason Momoa, as gorgeous and lovely as the man is, hoy, it's like expecting all humans to look like Barbie and Ken. It's preposterous. Like, no one is that. Even the most fabulous people are airbrushed in magazines and photos and things. So, one thing that we desperately need in the mermaid community, the fantasy community, the fantasy genre, fantasy art, sci-fi, I'm sure is the same thing. More representation of brown skin, of different bodies, of differently abled bodies, because everyone wants to see themselves represented. More queer folks in the space. I am bi, pan, whatever you want to call it, fluid, I joke, as a mermaid.
There you go.
So yeah, just more representation of anything that isn't just cis, white, tiny, young, 20 and under dudes and chicks. Like, we just need more diversity in general because we all want to see ourselves represented. And that includes at live events, Renaissance fairs, aquariums, wiki-watchy. The more people demand, beg, ask for those things, the more companies will start opening up their ranks to hiring more diverse people. But it's not going to happen until you fabulous beings out there, whether two-legger or merperson or fae or whatever you may be, start making noise and being like, hey, I want to see myself represented. Show me up there too. So yeah, just speak up, let them know.
I
Not
feel
to be
like.
like
Go ahead.
super
pop culture, but
Oh,
have y'all
no.
seen the flap around Pamela Anderson at the Met Gala this last week?
No, I
So,
know.
I
I'm
mean,
just tapping.
she
What
might
happened?
kind of count as a mer person, but what's really fascinating to me is, she went, she was, and she is in the imagination of so many people, that paradigm of white Barbie
Icon.
character, and kind of out in the ocean there. But she went to the Met Gala this last week, and she wore a very sort of sensible, very sparkly, almost sort of gaudy and in the best way top, but it was very concealing. It was she wasn't showing a lot of skin. She wore maybe no makeup or almost no makeup.
Really
She just had
good
a
makeup.
normal little haircut, and she just looked like
A normal person.
a human who was like going out. And she's gotten so much flack because she has been such a sex symbol, and she's into this movement of aging gracefully. And so she's gone
Wow.
from like
I'm
the
looking at the
center of
pictures.
the paradigm
Good
to
for her.
really sort of even with her positionality as a privileged white wealthy woman, at least in that sense of sort of embracing the reality that we are all aging all the time, and somehow that's a taboo in the industry for women or femme people.
I
It's just, I
love
thought it was a
this.
really powerful moment. picture that I'm looking at and the title that says, Pamela Anderson goes makeup free. I really don't think she's wearing no makeup. I know that this is what a lot of like people who have the watching movies all the time, kind of Hollywood brain rot, think of, and especially like, guys who are just constantly being thrown like sexy women kind of images. That's what they think of as no makeup. But for someone of her age, I highly doubt this is no makeup. But
She
anyway,
looks amazing.
yeah,
Right?
and
Isn't
the
that
dress
fun?
actually looks very sparkly, but maybe not the kind of sexiest shape.
But she still got that figure. I mean, like, she still looks incredible.
She's
Wow. You got that little hair, the little swoop.
being her authentic self, taking up space, and we love that for her.
And I like that she's brave enough to do it because, as a cis white blonde woman, maybe she's doing that intentionally to open that way and to be like, "Ain't nobody else can do it but me, so I'm gonna do it." You know?
Just like
That's
everybody else,
great.
it's like,
Yeah.
it's funny how it's like, I'm here to perform because everyone is like performing to some degree when they go on that red carpet for the Met Gala. But that's the statement that she's making, and I love that.
Who was the actress that was there last year? Tiny, just tall, goddessly elf brown skin, and was just legit covered in diamonds. Chocolate brown, gorgeous, super short hair.
I
I
want to
don't
say either
follow that
Megan
stuff.
Stallion, maybe it was
She
what's her
had like
name?
an African, traditionally African name,
Oh
I
yeah, I'll have to
think.
look that up, but yeah, I think I
But
remember who
yeah,
you're
look
talking
her up
about.
because the again, like, she's using her skin as a canvas and her platform to elevate Black beauty, and it was stunning.
Hell
It
yeah.
was just she was she said like I think she said she was wearing like 300,000 or 30,000 diamonds that they literally put on her by hand.
Incredible.
It
Wow.
was
Oh,
nuts.
wow.
Yeah.
The actress that played Elphaba, and I'm blanking on her name at the moment, but
Oh, in Wicked, the new
she,
Wicked
in
movie.
Wicked, yeah, she is stunning. She
She's
keeps
very
her
pretty.
hair really short, and she has dark skin, but she just looks so magnificent. All of the appearances I've seen her with since the movie, and yeah, she is definitely an icon.
Was she also at the Met Gala?
I'm sure she's kind of having her moment right now because
Having a moment, yeah. It's her
that movie
heyday.
was it really I wasn't sure what to expect because I didn't go see the musical, but wow, that movie shook me in ways that I was not expecting, and that was really awesome performance. I wanted to get back to we were talking about makeup,
Representation
and
matters.
yeah,
And there
representation
was a
definitely
woman in a wheelchair
matters.
in that movie, so there you go.
Oh yes, yeah,
Yes.
there is.
Yes, I did. To combine topics that we are talking about, disability and the Wicked movie, it was like one of the first times in a movie where they really maybe didn't make the loudest point about it, but made a point to be like, you don't touch somebody's wheelchair. You don't just grab them and take them somewhere else.
And consent. Yes. Yeah.
Elphaba knows that because Nessa is her sister. So it's like it's so important to have a loved one be standing up for you,
Yeah.
in a way that sometimes we ourselves aren't always standing up for ourselves. But if someone else does it for us, it's so powerful.
And it,
Yeah,
but
I've
it
seen.
also makes the point that we shouldn't need to. That once she makes that point, everyone else goes, "Oh, okay, that's something I'm gonna do
Oh, we
now."
learned. Maybe that movie will teach the next generation about, hey, don't freaking touch people's wheelchairs.
Yeah, I've seen some wheelchair users actually have signs on the back that's like, "Do not touch my wheelchair."
You wouldn't
Same
just
with
grab
guide
someone's
dogs.
legs, I hope.
And blind people with guide dogs, occasionally they'll have a thing.
Signs that say, don't touch,
Dog
I'm
working,
working.
do not touch.
Exactly.
Which is one of the really unfortunate things about, people spoofing their dogs as disability
Gross.
accommodation
Absolutely
dogs
gross.
is, yeah, it can, it really sort of erodes that trust there.
Gross.
And I mean, my dog, if I took him out of the house, if he's around people, he just wants pets, right? He is not trained in that way. And I can just, Like, I can't imagine just slapping on a like fake whatever
Sort of a
on
stop
him
sign.
and trying to pass him off as something that he's not trained to do. And
Yeah.
yeah.
It's unfortunate because I've seen the discourse that, like, we need to move away from the idea that wheelchair equals disabled. There are so many varieties of disabled people in this world, and that is important, but you don't want to take it to a place where, like you're saying, people fully are just so, I'm just going to do this because I want to bring my dog into the grocery store or whatever. But the thing is, you don't want to ever go up to someone and accuse them of not having a disability. So,
It, of course, and there's so many invisible disabilities, and
exactly.
it is a hard line to, it's sort of a self-regulation
Exactly. It's supposed
thing.
to be.
I think the
Yeah.
crux of it is also safety. So if
Yes.
someone goes running around in a wheelchair and maybe they quote unquote don't need it, they're not hurting anyone.
Right.
Whereas
A dog.
somebody with a dog, they are actively not only endangering other people in their immediate vicinity, but they are denigrating decades of the fight that blind
Yes.
and other disabled people have needed to have their guide dogs go everywhere. And now, literally, I have scads of blind friends who can't get on an Uber or a Lyft because people have been saying they have their service dog that has peed and pooed all over. And then now drivers will not let legit
It's
guide dogs
eroded. Yeah.
into their vehicle. So yeah,
Oh,
I think
no.
it's all like, does it only affect you or does it
Certainly
actually
doesn't.
reflect on a bunch of other people?
No,
Yeah.
that's not something I had heard of before. I'm not in like Uber or Lyft very often, but that's so sad. That's just,
It's really messed up.
you truly are, and I assume our listeners of the podcast are not the kind of people who would do this, but you truly are taking something like akin to your own legs or your own eyes away from somebody else if you do something like that.
You
It's
are actively harming other people who
actively
have fought for
harming
those rights.
the community exactly who fought for those rights.
And maybe I'm speaking from a place of privilege as a temporarily able-bodied
There
person
you
who
go.
doesn't need that kind of assistance. But I hope that our listeners either, would be the people that wouldn't do that, or maybe haven't really thought about it, and maybe this gives them something to think about in the future. Because life is complicated. We make choices all the time based on what seems appropriate. And yeah, if that's you, I look, keep part of this conversation, like interact with the disability rights movement and figure out what's best for you and your ethics is what I would invite our listeners to do. Because, if you're out there listening and this is something you've done out of, we all have ignorance, we all have blind spots, but we learn better and we do better. So, an invitation.
Mistakes happen, but the point is to grow and to change with time once you know better. What is it? What's the phrase? Once you do better, know better, do better?
You do
Something
better,
like that.
And I wanted to circle back to something you said, Inku, about temporarily able-bodied. And that is
Yes,
something
that was
very
so
big
important.
about disability rights, is that when we make something accessible for people who may have mobility issues, we make it more accessible for all of us because inevitably we will lose mobility. I mean, some of us may not experience it towards at the very end of our life, but there is always the possibility and probability that we, just living our lives, especially here in these, United States, will experience something debilitating that will have us cause us to have a disability. And so that's one of the reasons why, even if you are able-bodied temporarily, it's very important to advocate for people with disabilities, because you never know when
It's gonna
something
be
will
you.
happen, or an event, or an illness will take you, and then you have to completely rearrange your life. And that's one of the things about the moment we find ourselves in and having to advocate, because so many things are being taken that we've worked so hard for. And the thing that just like boggles my mind is a lot of the people who need these accommodations, who use these accommodations, are voting against their own self-interest. And as we continue to see this aging population, more and more and more of us, especially like our generation of millennials, hardly any of us are having kids anymore, for one, because it's so expensive, and for two, it's just we have a lot more choice, I think, than our previous generations, and the choice has been not to have children. So like as we get older and older, we're going to find that more and more of us are going to be considered disabled. And I feel like that's why it's just always better to invest in accessibility.
And
Absolutely.
not to bang on the point too much. I mean, obviously the argument is we all die young or live long enough to become disabled is kind of the phrase that I've heard people say, but also do it even if you imagine yourself magically living to an old age and never becoming disabled. Do it for literally your friends, your family members, your loved ones who are disabled, because I pretty much guarantee you know somebody.
Amen.
And sometimes it's become so normalized that, oh, Uncle Lloyd walks with a cane, and we don't use the word disabled because it's become too charged or whatever. But like disability pride, man, like we should, this used to be a lot more normal, constant wars, a lot more like disease, not as good medicine. Freaking everybody was dealing with something. And we need to bring back the put the spotlight on the fact that like literally all of us have something. I think a lot more people are disabled than we think they are, and people don't always put that moniker on themselves. But I think it ties back to talking about what you're doing, Ilaria, because you're talking about representation matters and wanting to see more types of bodies. I wonder if you've ever seen a mermaid who's missing a limb or something.
I love you are exactly tying into what I was thinking about how, disability representation, even 30, 50 years ago, disabled folks, you did not talk about that. You had your, crazy Uncle Jim in the attic, or your blind sister in an institution, or your developmentally disabled cousin in an institution. So disabled people used to, up until very recently, and even still recently, are shoved into the corner. That's what they mean by marginalized, because folks don't want to see that. Folks don't want to know that exists. When we are finally waking up and realizing how important it is to see these people and give them voices, us voices, and how vital it is to have them in the media, it's not just empowering them. The captions that a lot of people keep on their televisions
Rising tide
help.
lifts all boats, right?
Exactly. Don't just help hearing impaired people. They help people with ADHD. They help people who are cooking and they can't hear they're vacuuming and
They're
can't hear,
listening
so they
to
got the
British Bake
TV.
Off or something, and they can't understand all the
Yes. Or
accents.
the typewriter was invented for a blind woman. There are all these things that were made for accessibility that help us in our day-to-day elevators. I mean, yeah, so absolutely.
Going to say, I'd make the argument that pre-industrial revolution, like 300 years ago, I don't know for sure, but I wonder if we were shoving our disabled loved ones to the margins as much as we started to do post-industrial revolution,
Oh, they would be
where
killed. They would be killed, or they would be
there was
out
also
on the streets.
infanticide. There was also that 100%. But I like to think of the anthropological evidence that there is towards way, way, way early humans taking care of disabled people, clearly trying to keep them living despite the fact that they were disabled, and not this BS like survival of the fittest, leaving them out in the cold kind of thing. Like, I think there's a generous mix of both things were happening.
Yeah,
And it
no
depends on
doubt.
the
No
culture.
doubt.
Yeah,
Yeah,
depends on the
exactly.
culture.
I think that's a trap that we often fall into is was the ancient past or far past good or bad on whatever metric we're thinking. And it's like, yes, it was good and it was bad because
Exactly.
cultures have adapted in all sorts of different ways. And there have been cultures that accept and even revere people with different things that would be labeled disabilities today, and cultures that, yeah, went the genocide route.
Yeah,
for sure.
And I'm so, sure but on a like, long
and
enough
part of
timeline.
That is empowering, right? Because it means that we have the choice, that there's no reason to choose bad.
Yes. Right.
You know, like
we
have the
well
choice
informed.
in the human natural evolution palette that is culture, we can choose the right one.
Exactly.
We have that option.
On a long enough timeline, you might see that such and such culture had a history of, let's say, infanticide or whatever, and slowly stopped doing that. So like, Americans, whoever's listening, presumably mostly Americans, let's choose the right side of history, please. I'm begging you.
And like, if we have the technology to do it, why not do it? You know, a lot of the cultures that chose what we would consider not the best choices did those types of things out of patient, environmental, or whatever kinds of limitations that they were facing, and having to make real choices that we don't have to make today.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, even if they weren't forced by necessity into those choices, hopefully they would have made better choices too.
Right.
So why don't we use the privilege that we have being in a highly
this
advanced,
is a really great way to put it,
post-industrial
big
digital
green
society.
And Ku with the big green over here.
And we can look to various societies throughout cultures happening right now today. Various Native traditions and cultures look at folks with disabilities or different genders as, like you said, venerated, holy, respected. There are places, I believe, like Japan Disney has stuff for blind folks. You can go and feel a miniature model of the ride you're going on so that you know what to expect as a person with disabilities. So there are wonderful examples right now of ways to do it better in general.
That's cool.
Since you were talking about Tokyo Disney, do you travel a lot for your doing mermaid stuff?
Whenever I can, I've been all across the country to DC, to Florida, California, Washington, Seattle. I would love to do so much more. I want to be the googly-eyed version of Hannah Fraser, who is kind of the big mega star of the mermaid community. If anyone wants to look her up, she is amazing. But yeah, I would love to travel the world, like meeting seals and orcas and swimming with manatees and stuff, educating about both disability and blindness and eco education, those animals, wildlife conservation, etc.
Yeah, that's right. You mentioned before, or maybe it was before we started recording, about your like eco activism. Tell us about that.
Well, one of the wonderful things about being a mermaid is that it's a great way to educate about the environment and conservation. I think a lot of people forget about how vital water is to everyday existence, whether it's, you know, brushing and washing your face every day, or, you know, going swimming, or the river down the street, or whatever, down to what's on your plate, the fish, the seafood. Water is life, literally. If water disappeared tomorrow, humans could not exist. We require water to live. We are, I think, what is it, 75% water? This planet oddly has the same percentage of water.
Interesting.
It's funny how that goes. And so it's a wonderful way to educate people about science, conservation, marine animals, and to get them to, if you connect with something, and it's a mermaids in general are great as marine life ambassadors, because when you give a face to a realm that you may not have thought about before, we can act as ambassadors for the marine animals that desperately need our help, our conservation, for humans to clean up our waters, to produce less waste. So we can be their voice. We can be the voice for realms that don't really have one in society, which is why you might see mermaids at libraries and zoos. There are some mermaids, God, I wish I could be one, someone hire me, to swim at aquariums and zoos. That is another way that we can exist. Or some mermaids just read story time during the pandemic. My brain is trying to say two things at once. You ever have that moment? And During COVID, I had mermaid story time or quarantine story time, and I read things like children's books to just give people a little light and wonder and peace during a time where we were all just pulling our hair out and stressed and terrified. So mermaids can find all kinds of avenues to educate and give and inspire and empower and uplift, whether disabled or otherwise. So there's a lot of wonderful ways that this weird kind of, you say you're a professional mermaid, people go, okay, where's the straitjacket, Harold? So yeah, it's a wonderful career that can have all kinds of wonderful aspects and avenues to it. And we touched on earlier about swimming and stuff. I am an absolute water baby. My best friend, however, who I first met when I came out here, she does not swim. She is actually incredibly hydrophobic.
Wow.
So she and I would perform for years at land gigs, and whenever we mer other mermaids would need some would like want to make some content and need some help filming, she would literally hype herself up, and it's so cute. I've got some old videos of her. You could hear her psyching herself up just to put her face under the water. She would stand in the shallow end with whatever camera and put it underneath and help us film, and you can hear her go, "Hoo. One, two, three." And it's so adorable. But she was a freaking mermaid. She had tails and she would entertain at events just like anybody else, and you would never know. So it's a wonderful example of how, yes, water can be in a wonderful, empowering thing, whether you're disabled or otherwise, but it's also not required. If you have no mobility in the water, if you are hydrophobic, if you have MS or something that you feel like your muscles couldn't deal with all of the swimming and all that stuff, whatever your issue may be, don't feel like mermaiding is out of your reach, because you can be a land fish and that is totally okay and valid.
It's pretty cool.
I love that. Description of some of the activities just makes me, and this is only, I mean, this can only be a positive comparison, but makes me think of the drag queen community in so many ways. Like,
The
I just
overlap
love
is
it.
there, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely. I mean,
And
like the
drag queen
voice
community, the
cackle.
drag community more broadly. My apologies.
Is mermaiding
Absolutely.
not drag?
And burlesque and dance.
Oh yeah,
That's
you
one
said
of
love some
you do belly
burlesque.
dancing too.
Oh my God. Like literally one of the great things about this is that mermaiding encompasses, at least for me, because I, like I said, I do all the crafty, artsy, weirdy things, but I find in general, unless you are super wealthy and have money just coming in through your eyeballs, that mermaids do all these things in general. It encompasses crafting and makeup and costuming, because 9 times out of 10, you can't go to Nordstrom Rack and find a shell bra, So, or the tails. A lot of mermaids make their own tails. My friend Scarlett, she started out making her own tails. There are mermaids like, and mermen. Eric Ducharme, the one of the key mer people in the documentary, he started out just sewing his own stuff, and because he wanted to do it, and he didn't see mermaids and the mermen in the industry, so he went, okay. Sparkle Girl costume is
Let's
another
go.
like plus size mer person with a disability that now has her own business, and she makes incredible bubble tails. So yeah, this is mermaiding is a gateway drug to all kinds of things between makeup and dance and art, and lots of us are artsy, neurodivergent, queer, disabled, quote unquote weirdos. Mermaiding calls to so many different types of people that
Heck
it's
yeah.
pretty magical. We joked at one point. I was at California MerCon and I said, "So hey, what are you, we have all these wonderful specialized photo shoots. We've got a POC mermaid photo at the event. We have a trans mer photo at the event. We have a Society of Fat Mermaids photo at the event." And I was like, "Well, what about queer mermaids?" And someone said, "Honey, that's everybody here."
Everybody.
No.
Still good to shout it out.
Or, my next thought was disabled merfolk. But
There
again,
you
a lot
go.
of us
Yeah.
do. There are a lot of invisible disabilities, and mermaiding can be great for those of us with disabilities or who are spoony or chronic pain because you can make your own schedule. You can not take that gig if you know that you're going to be doing another gig the day before and won't have the spoons to do another one after. Like, it's a really tailor your own world, build your own, not only career, but realm kind of thing. It's a very choose your own adventure sort of career and hobby. You don't have to go into mermaiding just to be a professional. You can just go swim in a tail because you love it and it sets your soul free. Like, there are so many different ways to explore this realm, regardless of intent or ability or anything. Just if you want to do it, whether it's mermaid or be a scientist or be a singer or a gardener or a podcaster, do what you love because
Or
life
all
is
of it,
short.
like
Or
all
many
you
things.
garden in the morning, mermaid in the afternoon, scientist in the
Sounds
evening.
great.
That sounds
There you
like a
go.
good progression to me. I could do that on the daily.
Oh yeah. And let me formally invite if anybody wants to get together for a swim. Like I said, I love to travel. Let's make it happen. Let's do that thing. Like, I will come to you. We will have a day and I'll turn you into a fish. It'll be great.
Yeah, like just thinking of locations, I'm wondering if the Portland Mermaid Parade and Festival or like the PNW Mermaids, like Pacific Northwest Mermaids, was that part of your decision to go to the Pacific Northwest or was that just a happy confluence there?
Well, that those things didn't exist when I came out. I was
Oh,
initially a member of Una the Mermaid and her Traveling Fantasy Cove. That's where I got my start. She was, for a while, my mentor. And she, after a few years, came up with the Mermaid Parade. A little tea here for you. It was my idea for the Siren Ball that happens
oh,
after.
nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
So I'm no longer part of that group, but when I was out in Virginia and I heard that, mermaiding was happening out in Portland, I literally just Googled mermaid and Portland just to see what was what and did an image search, and I saw a fluffy mermaid and I said, "Oh my God, if you can be a mermaid out there and look like me, that's where I'm going."
We had a little technical difficulty, and during the break, we were talking about Enku's work as a sociology teacher. And Iluria, you were saying, talking about mermaid folklore.
Yeah, so just talking about how there's, need for representation all over the place. One of the misconceptions that I hear a lot of my POC merfolk talk about dealing with is that they get people going, "There's no such thing as a black merman. There's no such thing as a brown mermaid." And that's so
Come
not true.
on.
There are water legends literally in every culture around the world from the dawn of time.
Yeah.
So, like, Anku, as a sociology teacher, do you have examples? I know I do, but I'd love to hear you talk about some sociological tie-ins with what you do and our topic of the day.
So I'll admit a real pitfall of sociology is that we tend to be very US
Eurocentric.
centric and like Eurocentric.
Very centered
So
on the West, yeah.
historically, there's this distinction in the social sciences between sociology, which is like the us of
People,
the
yeah.
academy, which means middle class white people, and the them, which was anthropology. So if I was an anthropologist, I feel like I could just like go with it, but I can go on a very limited set of knowledge here. Mostly there's Mamiwata, who's kind of a Pan-African water goddess. There is the Vudan Yamaya.
Yamaya. Yamaya, yeah.
Yamaya, thank you for the correction. And other of the Haitian voodoo folk that deal with water.
Oshun.
Oshun, getting some of that masculine power energy in there. Erzuli, I can just apologize for my pronunciation of the Orisha names, but yeah, I wish I knew more.
Well, and then there's
I'll remember
also
that.
the mascot of Starbucks, which you have a special relationship with.
Well, that's my Lucine, or I've in some aspects that Starbucks logo is based on some mosaics that could be related to Melusine de Lucine, the very Northern European mermaid character there. That, but yeah, I'm curious about your deep dive, if you will, on that. Like, what are your thoughts around some of these cross-cultural thing, mermaid, water spirit energies?
If it was magical as I was growing up, I read it. So between, like legit books on folklore, I had like the witchcraft encyclopedia that was like this wide, with the three crones on, like anything that was magical or folklore related, fiction, nonfiction, I devoured it growing up. So from Native American traditions to African diaspora, like I love it all. There is the Tupi, I couldn't remember the end of the word for a minute, the Tupi legends of the pink dolphin mermaids, Yara,
Oh.
which, if you look, the translation is water princess, water goddess, and they were known to be basically shapeshifters. They looked like a pink dolphin, or they could present as a mermaid, or they could come up on land, and the way that you could discern one of these creatures is that they would have a hole in the top of the head, where the blowhole is. So there's legends from all around the world. There is Umayya, there is Oshun. I love that you touched on Urzali. If anybody out there is a horror movie fan, there is an indie movie called Urzali, Erzulie. They had a premiere out here in Portland. And it's available on like Netflix and all the places. I think it's available on Amazon. And it is a fabulous mermaid, spooky, scary movie based in that folklore. So definitely check that one.
Awesome.
That's a lot of that's a good one. And there are water legends to inspire your viewers here. There are water legends from every culture. So if you are Irish, if you are Scottish, you've got the Selkies and the seal folk, you've got the Murrow. If you are Native American, there is the Menehune and various other traditions. There's all these various tribes had their own legends. There's no one pillar of water being. In Africa, you've got actually, right now, there are legends. There are still talks in Africa, sightings of mermaids that are holding up construction for bridges being
I
made.
love
So, like, and
eco-terrorist mermaid.
yes, ego terrorists. And Israel also, I think one of the mayors in one of the cities in Israel has offered a reward. Like, if you can give a concrete sighting of one of the mermaids that has been sighted on the shores of one of their cities, they will pay you a huge chunk of money. So we
Whoa.
think of mermaid legend as a thing of the past or only in Western Europe.
That's
They
fascinating.
have been and are still everywhere. The whole thing about I love challenging this. I've had people give insult me online saying, oh, you're not a mermaid, you're a manatee. And that calls back to that whole,
That's
did
where the
Christopher
legend comes
Columbus
from.
and all of the sailors see manatees? I am sorry. Does the face of a manatee look anything at all like a human? Like, how high do you think they were to take in a manatee for a mermaid? So yeah, there's legends everywhere. So regardless of whether you're Italian or Portuguese or whatever, look into your own heritage and you will find water goddesses, merfolk of some type, shapeshifters. There's one in Ireland that is super, super, and throughout Celtic culture, that's super unknown to most folks. I'm gonna butcher the name. It's oh, it starts with an F. I'll put it in the chat. It's they're men. They're usually men, and they fiddle by waterfalls. They're like a siren, essentially, but they use violins as their siren song, and they are beautiful, beautiful,
I
beautiful, and
believe
they
that's the
exist.
Nero. The Marrow? Is
No,
that
that's
sound correct?
those are in the ocean.
Oh,
Yeah.
my
And
apologies.
actually,
Sorry.
the Murrows are often, depending on legend and what culture, sometimes they're really, really ugly, or the
Oh,
men are
no.
really,
Okay.
really ugly and the women are beautiful. So it all just
Sure.
depends. It's like Fëanor, or I'm gonna look it up and then kick myself that I can't remember the name, but there's F's, L's, and G's and R's in it. And so, yeah, whatever your culture is, if you decide you want to be a mermaid and you want to get your Mersona name and you want to do all the things, look in your own heritage. And this will also help prevent appropriation. You will find legends to inspire and guide you, because merfolk are everywhere in every legend system in the world.
One I've been thinking about recently is Sedna. And it actually, I think about her more because some of the astrologers that I follow are really into the dwarf planets, and Sedna's a dwarf planet. And so I get to hear her story a good bit. But that one, for any listeners who aren't familiar, Sedna, it's an Inuit myth story about a very truncated version, a young woman who is in a bad or unapproved marriage for some reason. Her father goes to save her in the boat on the way home. There's a big storm. She falls overboard and she tries to climb back into the boat, and he chops her fingers off and to save himself. And she falls into the ocean, and her fingers become the seals, and her body becomes the whales, and all of the sea creatures that sustained and that the Inuit culture lived in relationship with. So sort of this original, sort of like original sin or original violence, of the masculine against the feminine, creating the natural world, and a lot to unpack there, but
There's
it's
a lot
one
of
that.
mythology in general that has this like violent imagery that created. I think it probably, as someone who's not a sociologist, has something to do with kind of the inherent violence of things eat other things in order to live. And, you know, I'm sure there's something there.
There's a show on Netflix right now called North of North, and it focuses on the Inuk people. Actually, our sociologists here might be really interested in it. And they do have a water goddess in it, like full-on hair
Oh,
out to there. A woman has a
nice.
near-death experience, and she sees a water goddess, and the water goddess keeps coming up in her daily life to be like, girl. So it's fascinating. You might really dig that.
Yes.
And maybe that is Sedna. Or Sena. I actually, there's a mer person in the community. She goes by Sena, so I love that you touched on that. And I found the name Fossa Grim. The Fossa Grim are the male water spirits that I was talking about.
Oh,
Nice.
nice. Do you know of any
Yeah.
swamp water spirits? Are you into swampy stuff?
Oh my
I'm a bit
God.
of a swamp witch.
Like,
Urzali was one of those that was potentially considered one. I cannot remember her name. She's a huge TikToker that has a master's in folklore. She's the adorable little, like, I want to call her a redhead, but she's an adorable little thing. And she loves dispelling the romanticization of mermaids. She'll talk about, you know, all these legends of sirens that will kill you and do horrible things to you. And she talks about a swamp mermaid. I cannot remember her, the swamp mermaid's name, but she talks on how it basically teaches the legend of, or the moral of staying away from dangerous places. In European cultures, there is Jenny Greenteeth. She is a swamp creature.
Yeah,
She is a
Jenny
swamp
Greenteeth.
deep. I can put up a send you guys a photo at some point. I did a cosplay of hers literally like the day before I moved out here to Portland. I had a performance as Jenny Greenteeth because I love the idea of both mermaids and fairies. Everybody has this like Tinkerbell Ariel view of anything fae. And I'm like, oh no, baby, if you read the folklore, we will eat you.
The
And I love that. I
domestication.
love that, like, not only is folklore bright and pretty and happy and enchanting, but it is
Scary and
fae
dark.
in general are dual nature, and they teach lessons both dark and light. That's one of the magics of being a fae.
No, there's definitely the Disneyification of it all. This is how such and such, the Little Mermaid, is how lots of kids, especially millennial generation, were introduced to mermaids. I guess Splash was, it was after though, wasn't it? Or was it
No,
before?
Splash was the OG.
Was it the OG?
Yeah, unless you consider stuff like, oh my God, the one that the old black and white movies. Who I'm gonna be, Miranda. There are some old mermaid movies that were just amazing, but in the 80s and stuff, yeah,
Was
Splash
Splash
was.
the Daryl Hannah movie?
Yep, that's the one that got me hooked. Yep.
Oh my gosh. Can we give a very brief recap? Because we might have a lot of listeners or watchers who
Aren't
that's
familiar.
not part of their cultural toolkit.
Sure. I believe it was 1984. Tom
Little
Hanks
Mermaid
and
was
Daryl
87.
Hannah were in this stunning man has a kind of a disillusioned life, hits his head when a boat he goes out for some alone time on hits him in the noggin. He wakes up on a beach, and there is this wildling, semi-feral, beautiful, goddessly creature that finds him on a beach, and he goes and finds his life, and she comes and finds him. And it happens, it ends up being a creature of the sea, we shall say. It's a beautiful story. I don't want to give too much away, but Tom Schouse is one of the creators of the mermaid tale that you see in there. And but for lots of merfolk, that was like our, end all be all mega moments. Are there a lot of tales based around her? Merman Christian, who is a huge name in the mer community, he's hugely inspired by Splash as well. So he's got like a full-on medicine tale. I wish I had that kind of ability to make one or the money to buy one, but not yet, not yet. So yeah, it's an icon in the community. And once you watch it, you will know what salt has to do with bathtubs.
It's funny because my ears heard Medicine Tail, even though I knew a second later what you were talking about was the character Madison, because the girl decides to go by the name Madison. And I read recently that, like, up until that time, there were maybe not zero, but very few children, especially little girls, named Madison. And it became like a hugely popular name for girls after that movie.
Yep. And there's comedians who have touched on, aren't you glad she wasn't at 151st, you know?
I
That's good.
really love the mer creature from The Shape of Water. Are there mer
Oh,
people that
yes.
oh, what do they call it?
The asset. That's they never really give him a name. The
Oh
military
yeah.
only calls him the asset.
But are there mer people who do that full like makeup like that?
Oh my God, yeah. Creature Fins. Check her out. She makes it all herself. There are only a few other beings like her in my knowledge, and she makes all of their suits. It's a full head mask, like all the way around down to the neck, combined with a bodysuit and gloves, and they have claws on the ends of their feet and a big ass tail, and they look like sort of that like reptilian fish hybrid creature. It's so cool, and she is super nice. Check her out on, as we call it, Finstagram, which is also a nice way to get around
Nice.
saying it on TikTok. You will find that we mermaids, lots of us have puns, but it's another great way of getting of avoiding being shadow banned by referring to other social media. So we've got like the clock app, Fishbook is what I call Facebook, or the Book of Faces.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so check out Creature Fins. She does a very like asset thing, and there are wonderful interviews with Doug Jones where they talk about the huge process of him getting into this body prosthetic and how long it took. I think it was something like 8 hours each day to
Oh my
get
God.
him into the thing.
That's a third of your day.
Right?
That's a
And
full-time job.
that's a full-time
That's a
job
full-time.
getting into
Just
the
getting
suit.
into the costume is a full-time job.
Jesus. And usually
Ooh.
he's that for even when he's not the main character, like most of the
Yeah.
roles that he plays,
Yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
that's him. That's just his lot in life. But one of the things that I love that you mentioned about that, the fact that you mentioned that movie, is they touch on disability and how it would interplay in mer culture. They develop sign language. He speaks sign language in
Right.
that.
Ah, I've forgotten
And that
that.
touches on ASL. And that was one of the reasons why I have been obsessed with that movie. Many years ago, I started a thing called the Mermaid Sign Project, because my first year, my first event at an ever performing as a mermaid, it got me thinking about how huge it would be for folks with disabilities to go to a show, a mermaid show, or any festival where there were merfolk, and to not be able to communicate. Like, can you imagine going to a Renaissance fair and nobody speaking your language? Can And I'm going to get choked up because I'm a sap times 12. And walking up to a mermaid tank just to be, just to see what it was about, and being, seeing a mermaid going, "Hi, my name is," and I use a Y, Illuria Water Song, or, whatever, having a mermaid speak your language. How cute would that be? So that was the launching pad for a thing I started called the Mermaid Sign Project, and you can find it on a playlist on YouTube. I wanted to get mermaids to learn sign language, to learn ASL, and for it to be an accessible, I joke, a droplet, getting your toes in the sand exposure to mermaid and water related signs. So we've got all of a bunch of my friends signing things like rain or water or fish or shark. So it's little driblets and drablets for anybody, no matter what age, no matter what disability or ability, to just expose them to ASL and to show that it's easy, it's fun, it's accessible. And it's only like each video is maybe 30 seconds to 2.5 minutes, depending on the creator. And we show both the sign physically, there are demos. And then I also put in like examples of whatever it is. So if it's beach or shore, there are pictures, examples of what it is. And then in the description, I write out physically how to do the sign, because trying to be mindful of neurodivergencies, maybe, or the visually impaired, maybe a visual demo isn't any good, or maybe there's too much stimulation and the music and the visual is just too much. So then you just have a text representation. And sometimes people just like getting it broken down into words.
It's nice and
So
helpful.
if you want to check that out, and that's why I was so choked up by The Shape of Water, because it touches on how would mer people speak underwater? You can't, "Hi, my name is Bob," when you've got a mouthful of H2O.
Not to be a big
So
nerd
how would
about
you
it, but like
communicate?
literally, this is something that, I mean, that's what I studied in college was linguistics. So it's the definition of how we make language is pushing air out. So it's like that would be a lot different if we were underwater. And
We got to talk sometime because I'm a language junkie too. That
obviously we have a lot of examples of the way that other creatures communicate that's not spoken language the way we speak it, you know, whales
And to
and
touch
dolphins
on
and things like
Splash,
that.
like there's a moment where you will see what this has to do with TVs. She says, "My name is," in my language, and does these huge screeches. Dolphins and whales speak just like we do, but in with different vocalizations. So again, like
It's
there are
one of
different
the
ways to
things I'm
communicate.
excited. I really hope if just please let this happen for me, that if AI is worth all of the planet destroying consequences, translate whale and dolphin. I want
Please,
to be able to talk to whales and
this is
dolphins
what
and
people
know what they're
should
saying
be
and
using AI for.
recognize their personhood as highly socially complex, intelligent creatures that we share this planet with.
I might have
Yes,
to
amen.
find it. I might have to find it, but I think they have started decoding some of the whale songs. And one of the whale songs was literally kind of talking shit about another whale. So these,
What's more,
smack talk? Are you serious?
real than
Across
that? Spilling
oceans.
some tea, he's talking some
Hundreds and
shit.
hundreds of miles of whale song, being like,
Did you hear about Jerry?
"Ooh, Jerry's a dude." It's just like, I love that. I love that
My
whales
God.
are a little petty too,
I was gonna
I
say,
mean, and
is
then
there
there's
anything more humanizing? But maybe humanizing isn't the right word.
and then there's those like orcas that have been attacking boats, yachts.
Oh yes.
Yeah,
The
go after the
Clearly,
yachts.
there's
Do it.
communication of some sort. They're coordinating not through psychic thought. So,
They're doing it
they're
somehow.
communicating somehow. That would be
And
epic. Yeah. Can we hear Cancer and interpret whale song, please, with the AI?
Please.
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah.
yeah. Good. I like those priorities.
Right.
Cetaceans are so fascinating. I know we're kind of
I was
getting
going to
up on the
say,
hour here, but they're it's so fascinating to me that when cetaceans are subjected to a lot of the same pollution and overcrowding and just like problems that human beings are, they exhibit similar psychosis and personality disorders. I mean, the documentary Blackfish is a perfect example of what happens when you take one of these creatures and you put him into this essentially prison, and what it does to him as like the future that I want to see is when we finally give cetaceans their own sovereign rights and they have a Bill of Rights, because I absolutely believe that they are another sentient creature. And if you were to have, extraterrestrials come onto the planet and try to like speak to all of the
Beings, yeah.
sentient and beings that actually can communicate, they would be horrified about what we do with cetaceans.
Yeah.
It's
And dogs
interesting.
and cats. Can you
Yeah.
define cetaceans real quick? Just that's a term I don't know if
Oh,
all
so
listeners
cetaceans
or
are,
myself would know.
yeah, dolphins, whales. Yeah, pretty
Usually
much.
marine animals, yeah.
I don't know. I don't think seals and
Otters
walruses
and
and stuff
stuff,
like
no.
that, they're not
Yeah,
part of
no.
it. It's really just your dolphins and whales. So.
A great way to think about it is look for that sort of dolphinish tail. What whales and dolphins have a very similar tail shape. That's a great way to, or anything with a blowhole.
Okay.
Beluga. Yeah.
I also feel like octopus and
I was gonna
squid
say, I was
are
gonna bring
like
up
cephalopods,
cephalopods.
like they seem really
Definitely.
smart.
They're very intelligent, and they have distributed intelligence, which
Right. So
fascinates
cool.
me. I could, in another life, spend the rest of my life researching octopuses. Like,
Well,
I
you're
mean,
a linguist. Why don't you
why
dive
don't
into
you?
octopus language?
Why don't you
They
go back
can
to school,
see through
Jamie?
their feet. Like, I don't even understand.
The
They
coolest shit I've
can
ever
mimic
heard.
color through with that they literally there's no
Can't
light.
see.
They have
Right. How do they do that?
praise the
Unscrew the jar
octopus.
from the inside when they're in it. Yeah.
They're
Yeah.
yeah, no, cephalopods,
Yeah.
brother, sister, sibling, cephalopod. Yeah.
Yeah. There's just,
Yeah.
there's so many creatures in the ocean that are just so fascinating. And I want to bring it back to the whole you being an ambassador, like an ocean ambassador. You're even wearing this the sash, because like we need that. The oceans are in trouble. One of my really good friends was a NOAA observer. And so, and this was at least a couple of years ago, before the second administration that we're in now. Even then, it was just a really dire prognosis with a lot of different, like, we don't have sardines anymore, really. We overfish them. We don't have anchovies anymore. It's one of the reasons you don't see a lot of anchovies in the stores, because we completely overfish them. And we're just seeing this collapse of populations. And then we're starting to see that human waste, human trash,
Microplastics.
plastics, microplastics are decimating. Like finding microplastics at the bottom of the Mariana Trench. There's
Up top.
no part of the world now where we aren't seeing some sort of plastic toxicity and contamination. So, I mean, the oceans are just, they're so vital, and people are not interact with the oceans on a daily basis, unless we're like a marine biologist or a mermaid. But they're so important for people to know, because if our oceans start just completely collapsing, and we really don't have planet, because there's just so many important and vital things that oceans regulate and ocean creatures are a part of in that delicate ecosystem. So,
And it's so delicate that even the ocean raising by a degree or two is like killing certain aquatic populations,
Oh yeah.
because they're very sensitive to the ocean's temperature.
The
And it's
coral
like,
reefs, the temperature
yes.
kills the coral
Oh
reefs.
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, there's a lot of really tragic things happening with the coral reefs. It's not only that, it's dust. There's a lot of dust that gets on it, and there's a certain types of like virus now that is being spread on. It's just the coral reefs are in trouble, everybody. And it's in order to not just be completely overtaken by despair,
I was gonna say,
it's
what
really
can we do to
nice.
end on a positive note?
Yeah, let's end on a positive note. Is just, yeah, mermaids can help us have this
Be
wonderful
ambassadors.
human face to what is, essentially the oceans and
Yeah, I feel
water
a
and
lot of
how.
people don't think about how the circle of it is. What happens to one little tiny creature? You putting your glitter on your face, how that could affect a seahorse, which could affect a larger animal, well, a larger what you put into your, the fish that you eat, and so on and so forth. A lot of people don't think about that cycle. So yeah,
Definitely.
definitely.
And
Yeah.
I think one of the beautiful things about mermaid imagery, mermaid energy, is it can put a face to our water systems.
Precisely.
And we're social primates. We relate to faces in specific
Yes.
ways. And putting a
100%.
face on the ocean and putting a face on the river and putting a face on the swamp and putting a face on the well is a way to relate to it that totally shifts your mental and physical perspective of how we interact with this world, you know? It's, yeah, no,
And
it's
even if you're
magical.
not by the ocean, you can interact with as a mermaid or an ambassador of the ocean. I have this from, by the way, Mermaid at Any Age. It's one of the organizations that I belong to. I was a sort of like beauty thing, but it's not about beauty. It's who you are, it's what you do. And one of the ways that anybody can advocate for the ocean and our waterways is our local water purification and departments. Our water
Yeah,
departments go and
important.
like sanitation, get up in your local community and your local government and be a voice for protecting your local waters. That can make a huge difference. Little things like when you're brushing your teeth or washing your face, turning off the water in between when you're not actively using it. There's lots of ways that you can affect the water positively in little ways throughout your everyday that really can do a great lot of good.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
so many places across the United States have river keepers or watershed protectors. Water
Beach cleanups.
environmentalism is beach cleanups. It's very widespread. You don't have to necessarily live next to one of the Great Lakes or next to one of the oceans or the Gulf of Mexico to protect the waters. There's a lot of stuff we can do. Yeah.
And if you don't know what to do, there are, or you just want to be a mermaid, literally you can Google mermaid and your city, your state, whatever, or you can look it up in a Facebook search. There are mermaid groups all around the world, all throughout the US. I like to joke, we are everywhere, booga booga. But that's wonderful. So if you want to join a mermaid organization for a swim or to go help clean up your local environment, do a beach cleanup, do speak to your local water representatives. There are mermaid groups everywhere. So just research your local area and you will find ways to get active in so many different levels. Even if you never put on a tail, you can help your local state and local environment that way. So that's a great way to be
Yeah.
empowered, add a little magic, and do a little good. Even in these overwhelming and kind of scary times.
Yeah. And
Absolutely.
yeah, I think that's a good way to bring all this to a close. So before we end the recording, was there anything else that you wanted to let our listeners know or anything else you wanted to send a shout out for?
Yes, absolutely. I've got here my show notes here. I'm just going to flip down so I don't forget anything. I always see these things and then kick myself for the things that we forget. Or that I forget, not we. So, a couple things that I've been working on. I no longer have a pod, so I'm looking around if anybody wants to hire a multifaceted singing, dancing, face spackling, very dedicated, passionate mermaid. I am looking to move literally anywhere in the country, possibly anywhere in the world. So, if you need a fluffy fish for either an event or permanently, I am down. Let's do this. But also, for many years, I've been working on an adult mermaid coloring book to encourage representation, inspiration. It is inclusive. It's got brown mermaids, fat mermaids, mermen, non-binary people, LGBTQ relationships. It's meant to show that merfolk come in all shapes, sizes, colors, orientations, genders, all that fun stuff. So I'm looking for a publisher. If anybody knows publishing house or is a works with a publisher, I would love to talk to you about getting this mermaid coloring book a reality. Because of my visual impairment, I would love to find a place with an editing or a graphics department who can help me very slightly clean up some of my work so it's the best it can possibly be. And get this thing out. I've had lots of interest in it. I sell my prints at events, and people say, "Oh my God, whenever this comes out, let me know. I want to buy it. I just need to make it a thing." So that's one thing I've been working on.
So is it your art?
Yes, it's my art.
Oh,
Yep,
that's so cool.
absolutely. And I can send Angel some representation. But if you look me up, this is another thing I wanted to mention. I am available on pretty much all the social media except for what used to be, I guess what we call it now, the Dead Bird. I am
The dead bird.
on the Clock app, Finsta, Fishbook, on all the things, Blue Sky. Find me at YLLURIA. Pretty much, if you Google my name, you will find me. But I also have a link tree leading to all the things. And Instagram's got representations of my art. It's got the soap, which is how I met our wonderful host here, selling my soap. I'm going to be at Realms Unknown in September, part of another pod. It's just a temporary pod done for that event. There are mermaid conventions around the country. There is the California MerCon, which is happening in just a week or so on the 17th. There is Mermagicon, which already happened this year, but if you want to check that out, that's in the DC area. And in Florida, in June, there is the Afro Mermaid Summit, which is a celebration of POC merfolk. And as an ally, I go down to uplift and support that community. So absolutely
Where
go check that
is
out.
that? Oh my gosh, where's that Afro Mermaids or Summit?
OMG, it is the most epic and beautiful event held in Miami, Florida.
And it's in
They
June.
have, yeah, that is in June. They have these little excursions where we go to it's a place called the Secret Garden, where we gather and swim and have workshops. And then they have stuff at the home hotel as well, where there are vendors and more workshop, and there's a dance, and there's like a karaoke night. It is like the heart of, I call it the heart and soul of all of the mermaid conventions in the country.
That's
OMG,
so cool.
it is a blast, and it's not a super huge convention, so there's this family all welcoming atmosphere that you go with a bunch of strangers and you leave feeling like you've got family there. It's
That
so
sounds
beautiful.
so fun.
Yes.
That's great.
Aside from that, the only other thing I would say is if you want to help me on my adventures, if you want to help me travel to stuff or have access to materials, like I am a broke fish. I live on SSDI. So, and most of the mermaid events I do are for free. It's for the community. And this is not a cheap profession, or hobby. What if you're just getting into it for fun? The tails, the makeup, the headpieces, like it all costs coin. And going to Washington State, to Virginia and Miami, like that's all on me. So if you want to help me expand my adventures, I'm also looking to get a silicone tail because, as a blind mermaid, one of my biggest dreams is to travel around the country to schools for the blind with full silicone tail and top so that I can give the kids there something to feel. I have many fabric tails, but a silicone is the only one with a 3D dimension to it that is more tactile. And I would love to have a silicone tail to give the blind kids something to experience
That'd be
beyond just
so
the touch
cool.
of fabric.
Yeah.
And as a mermaid performer, it would be like a motivational thing to say, look, you can achieve your dreams. You can be
Yeah.
anything, even a fish.
Yeah.
So,
Hell
yeah, if
and
you want to
yes.
help me out with any of that, my link tree, you can find my Ko-fi and my Venmo. That's just a general, though. Like, I've never had anybody donate to it. And if not, that's okay. I know we are all broke and, poor. And especially with these times, finances
Yeah.
are uncertain. But that is just an option if you want to help my adventures. And that is it for me. Come find me on Linktree and all the things, the ticky-tackies and the finsta.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Eloria, so much for coming on the show. It was definitely great to talk to you. And
So
we
funny.
mermaids say that we have whenever mermaids gather, that's we call them pods.
There
So
you
if you have a pod that is like a family, just like dolphins. So yeah, and all
go.
the pods get together. It's wonderful.
So yeah, I'll go ahead and close out the recording, but thank you so
Thank you
much,
for having
Eloria.
Thanks so much for Eloria for such a great conversation on a wide range of topics. I think I could have got kept going for 3 hours. Like I said in the intro, I'd really love to interview them again.
Yes, and if you happen to live in the Pacific Northwest, be sure to look out for her mermaiding at events this summer, including Outer Realms, which is happening September 20th through the 22nd in Woodlawn, Washington. I plan on attending on Sunday this year, and I hope to meet more of the mermaids in her pod.
And now we turn to the part of the episode where we let you know how you can support our podcast and help to offset the costs of producing and creating content that we hope you enjoy, and that is through our Patreon. For just $1 a month, you can get access to our bonus episodes that come in the form of short-form essays about flowers, as with our Who's in Bloom series, written by Angel with original music from Ruby. We also periodically publish episodes of Tripping Through the Tarot and Deity Deep Dives, which occasionally end up on the main RSS feed, but mostly are available only through our Patreon. Also, at this level, you'll have access to Angel's yoga practice videos, which they share on this level. And finally, we offer our episodes ad-free on this platform, and Spotify has started adding ads to the show. So if you want to have an ad-free listening experience, be sure to check us out on there.
At the $5 a month level, I have finally gotten a chance to print new stickers, so I'll be sending them out to our supporters at this and our Science Witch Coven level. So we hope to get back to posting regular mailings since that is something that I really wanted to offer from this tier of support, and it's an excuse to keep doing art and getting stickers printed. Also, I'm in the process of revamping our Etsy page and getting it back online, so you'll be able to order stickers from there should you want to get stickers but not pay for a monthly subscription.
Finally, at our highest level of support, the Science Witch Coven, Angel is once again available for bookings for tarot readings over Zoom or natal chart readings. These are free to schedule for our supporters at this level, so if you would like a reading or natal chart analysis, reach on over at Patreon to book a 30-minute session over Zoom. And of course, listening and sharing the podcast is an amazing way to show your support and keep our network of witches and queerdos always growing and expanding.
I also want to mention that we finally have a date and a venue for our annual Trans Telethon, which is a live show to benefit the Rainbow Railroad. This is our third year producing the show, and this year it's going to be happening in Eugene, Oregon at the Sparrow and Serpent Pub, 7 p.m. on Thursday, November 20th, 2025, which is also Trans Remembrance Day. We plan on hosting a fundraiser via the podcast to offset some of the costs of producing the show, but this year the venue is letting us donate the entire ticket sales to benefit the Rainbow Railroad, and we'll be hosting the event in a college town and implementing the many lessons that we have learned from the past 2 years of producing this event. Ruby will once again be returning to perform her musical talents, and the show will be hosted by Eugene-based comic Sarah Levy and feature trans comedians and drag performances. For those not able to make it in person, we will be streaming the event on our Twitch channel, so stay tuned for more information about how you can help support trans rights.
If you want to follow us on social media, you can find us on Threads, Instagram, and Facebook as the Science Witch Podcast, and now on Blue Sky as Science Witch Pod. If you have any questions and you don't want to use social media, you can email us at questions@sciencewitchpodcast.com. Finally, you can find show notes and transcripts for this episode available at our website at sciencewitchpodcast.com. Until next time,
Live long and prosper.
and blessed be.